Hey everybody, this episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by the dual threat of Out of the Park Baseball and MLB Manager. For 1 week only, from July 7th through July 14th, you can get MLB Manager 2017 for just $1.99. That's 60% off. That is the mobile version of Out of the Park Baseball. You can get it on either your iPhone or for your Android phone. You can get it from the Android, get it for Androids from Google Play, and get it on the App Store for your iPhone. That's MLB Manager 2017 for just $1.99, 60% off. It is Out of the Park Baseball on the go. It is a lot of fun and is an addictive little app that lets you take control of any one of your favorite major league clubs this year and manage that franchise from now and into the future, as well as some special seasons from the past. And you could always purchase additional seasons too and have some fun. And of course, Out of the Park Baseball 18 is also on sale for this week of the All-Star Game for just $19.99. That's 50% off. You can get it on your Mac, you can get it on your PC, you can get it on the Linux machine. If you're one of those guys, you can play it on any kind of PC at all. We're very excited. It's the All-Star Game. It's by far the best of the All-Star Games of the sports. And you can get Out of the Park Baseball for $20. That's 50% off. And MLB Manager 2017 for just $2. That's 60% off. It's the All-Star Game sale brought to you by MLB Manager 2017 and Out of the Park Baseball 18. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Press Row Podcast. We appreciate it. Enjoy the show. We are into July now. We're halfway through the year, which is hard to believe, Rich Grisham. And in this episode of the Press Row Podcast, we're going to look back on the events of 2017 so far, including kind of reassessing the state of the games that released and looking at, again, some of the bigger stories that have developed. We all know how crazy the sports game schedule gets once late August arrives, for about that 5 to 6 week period where the majority of the games for the year end up being released. But we actually had a pretty interesting front half of the year with some independently developed games joining the party. Let's start, though, Rich, with the biggest game that comes out from January through June every year, and that's baseball. It's MLB The Show 17 this year. Where are you at with the game right now, Rich?
Well, I'm playing it, for one, so that's good. I play it on the treadmill almost exclusively. And I think I've mentioned before, I tend to work out at the office at work now more than my home office, where my obviously my treadmill is. But I still get in 2 to 3 workouts a week. So what I had been doing for quite some time was playing my franchise for a couple games, doing the player lock move and then unlocking in the 6, and then finishing up the inevitable 5 to 15 minutes, depending upon how long the two games took, and my road to the show. But after, I don't know, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I kind of got disillusioned with my franchise because my Mets were terrible. Not as terrible as the real world Mets, who are beyond terrible. I mean, my Mets, yeah. We were similar to the real world. We were 8 or 9 or 10 games behind the Nationals. I was much closer to 500 than the real world ones are, but still, it was just wasn't a particularly enjoyable team. And I wasn't really in the mood, because I only play when I'm on the treadmill, to sort of wheel and deal and try to figure out who do I trade to get either, you know, do I sell some assets and get some young players and sim through the rest of the year? Like, I'm just not in that mindset on the treadmill. I just want to play the games. Anyway, long story short, mm-hmm. 2 or 3 weeks ago, I really started I abandoned my franchise temporarily, or maybe permanently, and I've been focusing on my Road to the Show player. So I've put more time now into the Road to the Show in this version of MLB 17 than I have in many years. But I have put in many hours in previous years too. So I'm no newcomer to the mode. So played through my whole first year, never got out of AA, had a pretty good year. I hit like in the 290s, 13, 14 homers, 30 or 40 RBI. And then I had my spring training with the major leagues and hit very well. Got one at bat in every spring training game, basically, which was, by the way, much more painful to play the spring training than the regular season, because there's no moving right ahead to the next game in the series, because every game is an individual game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pain in the neck. But, you know, anyway, push through it. And then I got, I just made the club. There was no fanfare. There was no even announcement. It's just when the season started, I was the backup second baseman on the Oakland A's. And I got in the lineup once every 3 to 4 games and would get a pinch hit appearance in most of the games that I didn't start. And I've been slogging along, and my overall rating was in the high 60s because I would just, you know, allocate whatever little meager points I could get here and there. Mm-hmm. But I then started playing a little bit more, and then something reminded me. I'm like, you know what? I think I can use my stubs to buy training points. And I went in, and it wasn't particularly intuitive exactly how to do it, but then I quickly found out how to do it. And I wound up getting like 10 or 11,000 training points when I cashed in like 10 or 20,000 stubs.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, my dude went from overall 68 to like an 80 now is where I am. And what's funny is I've only played 5 or 10 games since I did that. I haven't exactly noticed any improvement really at all. But all of a sudden, I went from being one of the lowest rated players on my team to literally the highest rated player. Now, granted, these A's are terrible. Pitching is in particular horrific. I think we've got the worst record in the league. But still, I'm the highest rated guy at 80. It's funny, like I could have probably had a much better single year in the minors, but so far it looks like it actually didn't matter. And here I am in year two, and now it was a very interesting switch, and I'm interested to see how it goes moving forward too.
Yeah, you have the ability to spend those stubs because you're not playing Diamond Dynasty, right? So this currency system in the show, much like an NBA 2K, where you're earning a currency from everywhere, and then you can distribute, you can spend that currency within pretty much any of the modes. It forces you to kind of pick and choose. Now, if like you, Rich, if you just stick to one particular mode at a time, it's really not that detrimental. Now, if it were me and I had been playing Diamond Dynasty and I had those stubs, that would be put towards something in Diamond Dynasty as opposed to put towards something in Road to the Show. So that's the only unfortunate part of that. But yeah, I can see you boosted your guy up. I think sometimes legitimately when you have somebody who's lower rated, I don't know if you concentrate more or you don't expect certain type of results. And then when you get somebody who's higher rated, you think it's going to make up for shortcomings or lack of focus or whatever, just because you're just going to swing at everything because you got higher ratings. You're going to get a hit, right? You know, it's just common sense. Higher ratings doesn't always work out that way.
Nope. But I was actually doing okay for myself without that big
boost.
Right,
exactly. Yeah.
Which I'm sort of happy with. And I'm on dynamic difficulty. So inevitably, once I have like 3 or 4 good at-bats in a row, I'm starting to think, oh, no, here we go. And all of a sudden, boom, difficulty increased. You know, I was like, ah, you have success. You don't want to have too much success because now I'm at like all-star. And before I was a veteran or something like that. But now my stats are much better. So I should have more ability to have better outcomes even at the higher level if I was at least hanging beforehand. What's interesting is my guy has a lot of power, particularly from the left side. I'm a switch hitting second baseman, but I really haven't hit a whole lot of home runs. I've only hit 3 or 4, maybe 5 home runs in my year and a half.
I wonder if that's patch related, which we'll talk a little bit about here. But yeah, I haven't played much of the show really in probably the last 6 weeks, 8 weeks. It hit a point where I was into Diamond Dynasty at first, despite all the server issues. I kept trying to play, despite being discouraged by more server issues. I kept trying to play to reach these goals, the statistical goals, these different task-based goals to unlock, you know, different missions and things of that nature in Diamond Dynasty. And I hit a wall. I hit a wall pretty quick, and it was faster. That definitely happened faster than last year with MLB 16. And I don't know if it was just kind of feeling like it became too much of a grind, or if it was, again, being discouraged when I would spend an hour, and then the servers would crap out, and everything I did was meaningless. But
I don't feel like I'm alone. I know there's a few others who we've had on the podcast who were big into Diamond Dynasty who have kind of lost interest already and moved on to other things. And I've noticed a lot of, especially in the last 3 weeks maybe, a lot of negativity around MLB The Show, more so than usual, as we kind of approach this midpoint of the MLB season, at least as the All-Star break here is coming up. And there is, within the community, there's a really kind of unrest that's developed. And you can see it all over social media and in various forums. And it's coming from the people that are most dedicated to the game, I think. It's the people who are actually engaged with the show on a yearly basis. And it's a few things. It's the being upset with the servers. And that's boiled over. It's been, over 3 months since the game came out, and there are still server-related issues. Of course, it's not as widespread as the first few weeks, but there are still occasional server issues. People have discovered more exploits, especially when we're talking about online play. There are gameplay issues with the hitting, as I referred to earlier, where people aren't getting the power numbers they did prior to the patch, and people are squaring up hits and getting really weak results. And then animations, some, like I said, with the exploits, a lot of people are finding certain animations. Remember, we had last year a lot of animations where there was just no urgency, and people are finding a few of those again and taking advantage of them online in certain situations. And then I think we have to discuss a little bit about how the company, Sony San Diego, communicates or don't communicate, maybe is a better way to put it, and their tone-deaf social media, Rich, which I think makes far worse the situation with people because they feel like they're not being heard and they feel like they're being kind of tossed aside in favor of whatever they want to promote on a given day. So the show has really hit kind of a low point as far as the way it's perceived. And I think that's kind of interesting because I don't think we've ever been to this place with MLB The Show. It's so well thought of because its gameplay is excellent, and that's why people keep playing it despite issues, right? It has a solid franchise mode. It has a solid career mode. It has what is generally thought of as the best Ultimate Team type mode with Diamond Dynasty. But there are issues that continue to linger here, and I wonder if it's wearing on people, especially this year.
Well, I mean, I can only speak to my experiences with MLB The Show, which have been great. And that's not news to anybody because I talk about it every time we talk about it, whenever we talk about what we've been playing, because it's typically the show. So my perspective is very different than yours, and that's to be expected because we play very different modes. You know, it's hard for me to even talk about that unrest because I don't see it, but I'm not out there looking for it. Mm-hmm. I'm not exploring it. You know, we've got our hands full with everything that we're doing with what we do at Out of the Park as mm-hmm. well. So,
yeah.
It's all we can do to make sure that we're doing everything we can to be responsive to the community and talk to them. And, you know, just the other day, our CEO, Marcus Heinzen, we posted him doing a tutorial on Out of the Park 18. Just here's if you want to get in and play the game, here's a few fun ways to play the game. So, you know, we are very, very upfront about how we do everything that we can to be communicative with the fans and the people who play the games. It's hard for me to criticize others, you know, especially, you know, in the case of Sony, because I'm not really checking out what they're doing or not doing. But, you know, I do obviously, you know, follow people on Twitter, and I am acutely well aware of the technical issues that the show has had. Mm-hmm. And it's just a real challenge when you are in that situation where your product is not behaving the way that it's supposed to and people have paid good money for it with the expectation that it will. It's a very, very difficult place to be, especially if it's not even anything you can do about it. You know, so it's a no-win situation when your product isn't working the way that people expect it to work. So, you know, I respect the difficulties when you find yourself in that kind of a situation.
Yep. It's, it's kind of uncharted waters as far as where things are going. Because we're, as you noted, Rich, what you're doing in franchise and then Road to the Show is very different from what especially these people who
right.
make their voices known. Because they're not only just playing a different mode, they're spending money on this other mode,
yeah.
right?
So money changes everything.
Exactly. So that's where it all spirals, right? And then when you don't feel like you're being acknowledged or whatever it might be for those issues and within the situation, it starts to explode. And we've seen some of that. I mean, if you look at any tweet, any Facebook post from the show, 90% of replies are... Actually, I'd probably say higher are criticism and expressing disappointment or asking for some sort of response to various issues.
Well,
and, yeah,
there could be capacity there too, right? I mean, the amount of the volume of responses that you can get via social media platforms can overwhelm even well-equipped help desks and social media staff. So, you know, the perceived lack of response could very well be they're getting way more responses that can possibly be reacted to. I don't know that, but I'm just saying that's a possibility here.
But the biggest problem with the show is that their social accounts, they don't engage with people, period. They aren't responding to people, they aren't replying or addressing issues. It's all promotional stuff, which is in this day and age, that's just not good enough, right? It
well,
like they don't have point people or they don't have the social media accounts actually engaging with people. Instead,
but that's their right. That's their right. That's their
it is. It's not,
choice.
Maybe not the way to the direction you want to go.
Well, it depends, right? And I'm not saying it is or it isn't. But my point is social media, when you're an organization, you can use social media however you see fit, right? And interacting individually to responses can be a big challenge. Who do you respond to? Who don't you respond to? You know, obviously the amount of negativity is going to become overwhelming no matter what, whether it's justified in any way or not. You know, they're under no obligation to directly communicate with anybody via social media or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard for us to always respond to everything. And we're also a very small organization and we're all doing 10 things. So, again, I mean, I understand where you're coming from. I'm just, it might just be like, look, this is how we're going to operate our social media channels and good times and bad. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, of course, there are always going to be different approaches to that. I think it's just, it's very different in that sense because it's not about what's happening with the game or with the community or with customers. It's, hey, you know, we're trying to sell more copies of the game to all these people who already bought it, right? If you were using the Out of the Park Twitter account only to try and promote the game, I don't think that works, right? It doesn't, because these followers are likely already purchasers of the game, right? So that's why you don't see these other EAs. They're not always trying to sell the game. They're also creating content related to the game, or they're engaging with people in different ways, whether that be responding to issues or just doing fun type of things to make people feel like they're a part of the product, right? It's a very different way to go about things, and I'm just not sure that continually trying to sell and ignore what people actually care about at a given time is the right approach to take. But like you said, it's their choice, But at some point, you know, they, whether for the good and the bad, they have to deal with the consequences of that, right?
Well, of course, everyone has to deal with the consequences of whatever they say and do in every conversation we're having. I mean, EA is different. EA is a much larger organization with dedicated teams of multiple people manning social accounts for not only the main games that EA sells, but also the mobile titles and even the ultimate team modes. So the scale that EA has to do things is, it's, in my opinion, unfair to compare that to the I'm sure much smaller social media resources that MLB, you know, the show team has. And it also seems to be that they're being out there. Like, I know they did a live stream a week or two ago. I don't know how it was received. I don't know if it was well received or not.
Not really.
But I mean, it seems to me from where I am, and again, it's not a cop out. I'm like, this is legit. Like, I'm not paying that close attention to it because of everything else that I have going on. But from where I have been sitting, it seems like they have been, just continuing to communicate.
Right. There was one stream. It took over three months to do a stream. And, you know, that was watched by, what, maybe 1,000 people.
I don't know.
The vast majority, of course, are not going to watch a Twitch stream about, whatever the topics end up being. So that's not exactly the best way to go about it. But you're right. That's at least a development on the positive, you know, trend type of thing. If that became something regular, absolutely, that could be.
Yeah, and those kinds of things take time, resources, and planning, and it's no small undertaking to do a good job with all of those kinds of things.
Well, hey, everybody, we're going to take just a moment from this argument between me and Brian to talk about our sponsors this week, and we're really excited about this. HelloFresh is a fantastic meal delivery service that I am a current customer. So it makes me really happy to be able to have them sponsor the show. It's kind of a win-win. So HelloFresh is on a mission to save home cooking because they think it's just too good to go away. They are all about making cooking more fun, so they focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. They think of themselves as a farm-to-box company because they want everyone to have access to fresh ingredients that inspire great meals. But they also are a couch-to-kitchen company because they feel that the best way to kick those 5 p.m. excuses is by feeling unstoppable in the kitchen. So I mentioned I'm a customer, and I use HelloFresh regularly now. And they do a really nice job of making it easy and fun. So you get this big old box with several recipes in it. When you open it up, everything is nice and cool because they keep it cold with these ice packs and these temperature controlled boxes. And you take all the stuff out and it looks great. And they give you very clear instructions. It's really just about making sure that you put aside the time, and it's not a lot of time, but you got about 30 minutes, right? So 30 minutes of time and you're going to feel like a champion. HelloFresh is the meal delivery kit service that makes cooking more fun so that, I said, you can focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. And each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions, again, designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novices to seasoned home cooks short on time. And they're right, because I'm no cook. I'm not a cook, and I was cooking along with my 9-year-old son. We had some fun doing it. HelloFresh sources the freshest ingredients measured to the exact quantities needed so there's no food waste. They employ 2 full-time registered dietitians on staff who review each recipe to ensure that it's nutritionally balanced. And I mentioned they deliver this food right to your doorstep in a recyclable insulated box for free. And they are now offering light summer meals, and they've also just introduced breakfast options. So, you know, and maybe the most important thing, it's less than $10 a meal. So I mentioned they delivered the box to me. The meal that I had the first night was this really good wasabi lime salmon. I love salmon. I love wasabi. And this was a fantastic meal. Really enjoyed it. I also was cooking up some Southwestern stuffed peppers with ground beef, Canona, and Monterey Jack cheese. It was fantastic. And it was a really fun way to prepare the meal and to eat some really good food. And I got to have some fun with my son cooking as well. So here's what we want you to do. You're a fan of the Press Rub podcast. You listen all the time. We appreciate that. Help us keep making this show and use the promo code PressRow30 when you go to HelloFresh.com. If you use that code of PressRow30, you're going to get $30 off your first week of deliveries. $30 off your first week of deliveries. So here's what you do. You go to HelloFresh.com. You enter PressRow30 when you subscribe, and you're going to get $30 off. That is a deal that's hard to beat. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Press Row podcast. Thank you to HelloFresh, and enjoy the rest of the show.
So another game that released this year, and this is an interesting one because it involves a league license, but an independent developer, and they've had their own growing pains. That's NBA Playgrounds, which was a pretty promising game, and because it pretty much a takeoff on NBA Jam, and they had, like I said, the actual NBA license, which is rare for an independent developer, and they put out a game that was pretty fun, but a little lacking in content, a little in the way of design decisions that probably went the wrong direction, but decent product, right? But they've continued to improve the game post-release. They communicated really well, actually. This independent company did, and put out a couple updates that made the game, that fleshed out the game better, that added to the roster, that fixed issues people felt about the game and improved the actual gameplay, with the exception, of course, of Nintendo Switch, where it still doesn't have a patch and it's missing half of the game. And I don't know, you probably haven't gone back to play more of this anytime recently, have you?
I have not recently, but I did enjoy a lot of what I played up to when I got far enough up a ladder to where the teams got extremely difficult. And I have said, I think multiple times, even on this show, yeah, I would like to play you online. And obviously life is kind of getting in the way of us figuring out how and when to do that. But mm-hmm. I am going to play it again. And the reason I'm going to play it again is because I'm going to text you or something, be like, hey, let's play some Playgrounds. And you say, sure. And then we'll have a little fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's. I have not played much of it recently. I've just kind of followed the developments there. And it's pretty discouraging what's going on the Switch side. People who spent full price on the game, if I remember, what was it, 50? I think it was 50 full price. But
I got it on the PS4, so yeah. I did not get it on the Switch.
Yeah, it was the same price on all of them. But the Switch didn't have any online play, which is half of the game. And it still doesn't have any online play, despite them promising it was only going to be a few days after, and it's now been like 2 months. So that is really discouraging. We talked about on the last, I think it was the last episode of the podcast, Rich. It was either the last one or the one before, what we thought these patch issues meant for the Switch, and we both think it's probably not much of anything to be too concerned about. But it's definitely disappointing to see the people who spent their money on the game and not getting what they were advertised. And that's going to be an issue as far as going forward for this company, at least on Nintendo's side of things, and the trust that they maybe lost there already on a system that's starving for games at this point still. But I like NBA Playgrounds. I thought it had the potential to be, maybe not with this one, but with a sequel, could be really good. And I guarantee you, they didn't spend all that money on the license and developing the game from scratch to drop it after one game. They definitely have a long-term plan. So I think it's going to be interesting to see where that goes on the other systems and on PC. On Switch, it may be dead in the water already. Otherwise, Rich, I think the first half of the year, the best game, the best sports game, in my opinion, is the Golf Club 2. Do you agree with me?
I would say it's MLB The Show, with Golf Club 2 being second, for the reasons that we already spoke of, because what I've played of the show, it's been great, and I'm continuing to play it. Mm-hmm. But I would certainly not fight you on the Golf Club 2, because it's great too.
Yeah, we are currently playing in the Pasta Padre Society on PS4. Which is pretty cool. I set up a tournament, let it run for 2 or 3 days, And I think we've got a lot of people. I think the last one had at least 60 play the full tournament. And it's pretty neat. We set that up. We get to see everybody's scores. You get payouts, coin payouts based on where you finish. So I have an entry fee set up, and then half of that entry fee goes to the club, which allows me to upgrade our society. So now we're up to, we've got a better clubhouse.
Rich, you know, I hear you. You I hear you in. Smiling.
Yeah.
I literally hear you smiling. You like getting that 50%,
I'm raking
don't you?
It in. Yeah. No, we all benefit, Rich. Check out our clubhouse. I know. It's looking super, super nice now.
I'm excited. Very excited.
But that also allows me, as the administrator side, to do more events in a season. It's one of the things that come along with upgrading your society. So that's been really cool. The only thing I question is that there are some people who are ridiculously good at this game, or as we had a few people asking about, wondering if some people are cheating at the game, Rich, because it's hard to tell when you think you play well and you shoot like under two, a score of under two, and then you look and somebody on the leaderboard shot, you know, like minus 24, you know.
Right.
Because there was someone in our last tournament, and he's really good, because he even said it. He's using the better set of clubs, and he's reaching par fours with, you know, off the tee. He's reaching the green. So, but it's just a little bit frustrating when you think you play well and you see, well, maybe I didn't play so well compared to some of those people.
Yeah, it is discouraging to see that. So I try to look at it, well, who can I beat that I know? So I was really gunning hard for you and for Pete. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get either, but that's because I, you know, only shot like a 65 in the fourth round instead of a 62 or a 63. Mm. Like I was right there, but and that's what I do, because I look at those top leaderboard people and I'm like, okay, and I know that I'm never going to get like that in this game. I'm probably I'm not as good at the golf club too as I will be in about a week or two, but I'm that close to being as good as I'm ever going to be, because I'm only ever going to be able to play it for a couple, two or three rounds a week in a typical week. And I'm okay with that. But it's definitely like, how do these people get so good at this game?
Yeah,
it's so that's a little rough. So you're just gonna have to kick them out. You know what I mean? I'll be like, look, sorry, I can't have you, being 20 shots better than everybody else, right? You're just gonna have to get rid of them. It's no fun.
It's an interesting balance on my end, because I have to decide, you know, with each tournament, what course do I want to use for the tournament. And I'm looking, and I've had feedback on some of these courses already, which I thought the first one was an easy course, so I thought it would make people feel good that at least they're playing well, even if everybody else on the leaderboard is playing well and maybe better. But at least you feel like you're doing, you know, you're getting pars and birdies and stuff, and you're feeling good about it instead of triple bogeys, right? Which can just kill your spirit.
Yes.
But then I used like kind of a more medium course on the last tournament, and there were still some high scores. There were still some, I mean, ridiculously high scores. But then I also heard from people who are like, oh, I didn't even want to play that course because it's unfair. So I don't know, like, I want to take the difficulty up even further on probably the next one, not the one that's going through the weekend, but the one after that, and do like a hard course, because right now I think we're doing one that says it's medium difficulty. But then I don't want to push people away from the game either, because they really struggle. I mean, what do you think we should do with that?
I don't know. It's there's so many nuances to this because of the different kinds of clubs and things like that. For example, I'm playing with the baseline clubs, whatever they are. What is the best way for me to see what the experience is like, other than getting out on the course and playing with the new clubs? Like, that's one of the things that I'm wondering about is, okay, well, what should I do? How should I approach it? And that's just like one of like nine different things that I'm thinking about as I'm playing this game. So then you have to take that and multiply that times all the people in your society and what kind of thing you want to do. It's such a what's cool about the golf club too is that we can even have these kinds of discussions. Yeah. The best thing is, I think, make adjustments, see what happens, and then keep making adjustments. You know, try harder courses, try easier courses, sort of go back and forth, adjust difficulties and such until you sort of find what is a majority sweet spot.
Other games that came out in the first half of the year, we had Hot Wheels expansion of Forza Horizon 3. We had a game, an arcade-style game called Old Time Hockey. We had Disc Jam, which was kind of an interesting take on tennis but not really tennis, but tennis and, what is it, air hockey? Is
that what it was? Well, it's frisbee, yeah. Hockey, soccer, tennis, badminton, Rocket League,
yeah,
all thrown in there.
And then we also had ARMS on the Nintendo Switch, interesting fighting game. So what was it outside of the show, NBA Playgrounds and the Golf Club too? What game stood out to you the most so far this year?
Well, I like all of the games that you mentioned. Hot Wheels is of those the one that I have enjoyed the most, not mm-hmm. just for me, but also for my son. We've had a little bit of fun. He's really enjoyed it in spurts too. He's not really big into racing games that much, but that's also, so that's, I've gotten more out of that because it's not just me. But ARMS is interesting. I've had ARMS since launch. I haven't played that much of it, but I've gone through two rounds now. And again, I hate to sound like, well, I'm not of this, I'm not of that, but I'm not really a fighting game guy. And I can already see by going through like the second round of the players, you know, it definitely becomes a technical game, which is a good thing. But I don't have that sort of muscle memory or that history or legacy with these kinds of games. And I'm just wondering if I'm even going to have a chance in like the third, much less the fourth go round. And I know you can go online and play, but I've played so little, I'm sure, I don't know how like they do with matchmaking or whatever, but I'm sure I'm way behind whatever community is out there right now too. But those are hypotheses. I don't know those. I just sort of, I'm guessing about at that. But yeah. ARMS is fun. And ARMS is, I'm partial to the Switch. I like that Switch. And ARMS is kind of cool. I'm glad I have it. I know there'll be a few points in time, especially over the summer, a little vacationing, where I'll probably get in a little extra gaming time and I'll be able to sit down and think, all right, let me do the next 30, 60 minutes with ARMS and try to blast through another round, and move mm-hmm. up a level. Because it even when you go from the first to the second round, you immediately notice the second go around, it's more difficult. And it took me a couple times, and then I did it, and then I sort of blasted through it and didn't have a lot of trouble. So I know that challenge is there, and I look forward to the challenge. But for me, for that particular kind of way to play that, I got to be in the right frame of mind and know that I got an hour, because it's going to take me. I'm going to have to learn some stuff and get better, and then I'll figure it out and blast through it.
So, and ARMS also has a couple modes that are kind of unique, like the volleyball, which makes me think of another game that could do unique things, like Rocket League, which continues to put out content, which literally on the day we're recording this, they just put out their anniversary content. It's been, the game came out 2 years ago, and we're still talking about it, and it's still played by millions of people. I think the number they had was that now 33 million people have played Rocket League. And it'll be reaching Nintendo Switch later this year. So Rocket League continues to be a really cool story. And I think ARMS could also kind of go that direction where they do some different stuff with it, because there's a lot of fun things they could do with just the ARMS idea that we're already seeing a few signs of in the base product. Rocket League to me continues to be kind of that sensation. That it just hasn't died out. People continue to play. It's big in esports. It's really doing well beyond anything could have ever imagined for that game. So I think it's fascinating to me that here we are 2 years later from Rocket League, Rich, and it's still a game on the conscience of many, many people.
Well, a great game gets you a lot, and there's no denying that Rocket League is a great game. And so when you've got that as your foundation, you can really do special things. And not only do they have that as the foundation, but they clearly have the resources that they need to deliver things in a timely manner that their fans want. It's an amazing success story, not just the launch, but as you said, a couple of years later, they took a good thing and they made it better. And it's hard to do that. Mm. It's really difficult to do that. There's not a lot of blueprints. In fact, I would say there's no blueprint for what they did, or be, you know, launching for free and then sort of going through different distribution channels and then becoming a paid game and then mm-hmm. all of the stuff on top of it and making it as a game as a service, which is what it is now. It's tremendous. Just such a great story and inspirational, frankly.
So some of the let's move on to, you know, the other stories really that have come out of the first half of the year. Some of the bigger ones that I took note of, and you know, just tell me what jumps out to you, Rich, and we'll talk about it more. I think one of the big things of the year is we've seen more, as I just referred to briefly, more as far as esports go. So we had the announcement of NBA 2K, their e-league, which they are teaming up with the NBA to create teams owned by the actual NBA teams. Then we also had controversies in Madden's esports with cheating and conduct-related issues. But esports has become a bigger part of what these companies are trying to do. They're designing the games in ways to benefit esports. They're looking to promote their games through esports. They're looking to obviously make money through esports. So that's a big direction that they're going now, and you see that in most of these sports games. Then we had something like Xbox Game Pass, another digital service. We have
love it,
yeah,
love it.
We'll hit on that
here. All the time.
Yeah, Xbox Game Pass, Rich. I mean, you're continuing to use that, right? What have you been playing off of that?
I've been playing a lot. I've played through both of the Toy Soldiers games from years ago that are spectacular.
So are these games you would never have played before?
Would never have played, and I, all my fault. There's no reason I shouldn't have played Toy Soldiers when it came out 10 years ago, other than the fact that's kind of around the time when my first son was born. And so life gets a little different when things like that happen.
That's a reasonable excuse.
I just missed it. And especially the original Toy Soldiers is one of the most fun games I have played in years. Just love, love, love it. And playing through it again on more difficult levels, just enjoying it. Playing Mad Max, which is not a game I ever would have played, but I knew was very well thought of, very highly rated. And I'm I am a material amount of time into that. Have played tons of Plants vs. Zombies, which I could probably have played on EA Access, but it's right there. I've played, there's a bunch of cool arcade games. There's, you know, the Pac-Man collection and Pac-Man 256 and Galaga and Dig Dug. So there's a whole bunch of that stuff, which is super fun to have a button press away from playing on your TV. And that's just off the top. Oh, I played some XCOM. It's a wonderful little service, and I find myself really sort of laughing that there's no need for me to buy new games because of all of these are great games that I can play that I missed years ago. And so I'm like, I'm not playing as much of the Golf Club as I could or of the show as I could. And I've sort of stopped playing FIFA in lieu of sort of dabbling in two or three games at a time for 30 minutes at a pop a few nights a week using the Games Pass. It's just great. I love it. And I love the combination of having those games and being able to download them as opposed to streaming on PlayStation Now. Like that's the big thing for me. And I'm lucky. I bought a terabyte USB drive in one of the recent updates, or maybe not that recent updates. Let me just plug that in directly And now all of a sudden I don't have to do anything. I just download all these games. So that's been another nice aspect of it, because if I didn't have that external hard drive plugged in the Xbox One, this service would not be nearly as much fun, because I would have to get rid of every other game that I had.
And there are a couple sports games on the Xbox Game Pass. There's NBA 2K16. There's Super Mega Baseball. It'll be interesting to see what happens there, because obviously most of the sports games are going to end up on EA Access, because most of the sports games come from EA Sports. But the other games, so from independent developers or from 2K, you're going to see them pop up on here from time to time. And I wouldn't be surprised to see like an NBA 2K17 go in next month or something, right before, just like EA does, put them in the vault, get people into them, get people playing so that they're more likely to buy the new game. Won't be surprised if NBA 2K17 gets in there soon. And then, you know, down the line, one day, maybe an NBA Playgrounds will get in there. Maybe a Disc Jam will get in there, because that was free on PlayStation 4 side. It wasn't for Xbox One. And so there's all sorts of possibilities there. And the value is obviously great if you're into trying out different types of games. It's not a great one if you're just into sports games yet, but there are possibilities there.
There's so much. There's so many good games that are available through that service, both of those services. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to argue against them.
Well, and that's why I would say, you know, I still get questions about what system would you recommend, right? If you're choosing between an Xbox One and a PS4, and there's two big factors, and that's, are you into baseball? Because if you are, then you have to get a PS4, because that's where the show is. Otherwise, though, I think the one you would more easily recommend would be the Xbox One, right? Because you can buy an Xbox One for whatever, what's the Xbox One S now? Is that like $250? Whatever it is, you're paying for the console, and instead of paying another $60 for a game or another $120 to get two more games, you're paying a few bucks a month for EA Access. You're paying $10 a month for Xbox Game Pass. So get them both.
I think so. Yeah.
Get them both, and you're paying what is it? I think it comes out to like $12 or $13 a month to have both of them.
Yeah.
And then you've got your hands on
everything,
like 200 different games.
So I mean, an impossibly large volume of great games. These are the and good games, and I'm sure there's some stinkers in there too, but there's a high quality quotient to that. And that's I think worth mentioning. We know in the EA Access, EA makes less games now than they used to, and one of the results of that is that their games tend to be better for it. And in the Xbox Games Pass, though, there are some legit good games that are of AAA quality. I mentioned Mad Max. That's a very much AAA game. You know, there's the entire BioShock collection is in there. There's a lot of great old Xbox 360 games, a ton of Xbox One games. And so, you know, it's not like they just threw a bunch of poorly rated shovelware games in there. They're good stuff. You'll get your money's worth.
Another story. We haven't actually gotten to see materialize really yet, but just that EA announced, you know, Madden is going to have its big story mode. And so story modes have kind of grown. We had story modes before NBA 2K, obviously. There was the likes of Fight Night Champion, which was basically based around a story, and a few others. But really came into prominence with NBA 2K as far as having a story mode in a game that releases annually and coming up with a new story every year. It's like creating a movie. And that's what we're seeing with Madden this year. They have their story mode. It is not going to be especially interactive. It is just kind of like playing through a movie and playing a small role within it. But it's something they needed to kind of keep up, and it's something that helps them in terms of marketing, and it's something that helps reach a different type of consumer, someone who maybe thinks that just playing Madden normally is boring, or maybe thinks playing Madden normally is too difficult or complicated, but you can get your football fix this way. You can be a part of something bigger, and I think that could appeal to a lot of people.
It is very difficult to try something new in the sports video game world, especially these days. These are very large games with very entrenched fans and very long-term set expectations. I applaud Mike Young and Todd Zuniga and the whole team for doing this thing. Whether it's going to work or not, who knows? They're under no obligation to do it next year or the year after that. That could be a one-and-done thing, or it could be a bigger, broader scope. Don't know, but just because they do it this year doesn't mean they have to do it next year. Like, they didn't do another Spike Lee story mode.
Well, they did another story mode, but they dumped Spike.
Well, but I mean, these kind of things, you evolve, you change, you do new things. Some things are going to be fantastic. Some things are going to be okay. And some things will be different, but it's very difficult to even do anything new. And when I say it's difficult to do, it's difficult to do it well. Sure. And doing it well is the key. So I applaud it. I'm looking forward to it. And it's kind of cool, again, that they're just doing something completely different. That's cool. Like, to make this the Telltale game kind of a thing. It's a bold step, and I think it's cool, and we'll see how it goes.
Finally, let's talk about consoles, Rich, because we had a new console come out, Nintendo Switch, which you love, and we had an announcement of a new console that'll be coming out later this year. The Xbox One X. So tell me first your thoughts, general thoughts on Nintendo Switch. We've debated a little bit what it means for sports, but just overall in general, how you feel about the Switch at this point and where you think it's going.
Overall, I absolutely love it. I love it for a lot of reasons. Number one, the machine itself is a great machine. It's well put together. It's strong. It is everything functionally that they advertised it, meaning you can legitimately just plop it right out of the dock and be playing in the handheld mode, slide it right back into the dock, and boom, you're on your TV. That's legit. It's that easy. I love the Pro Controller, which I know is an extra thing that I pay, but it's a really good controller that I like playing. I love Nintendo as a dad of a young kid, that this is a platform that I can really trust to deliver the kind of games that I know that I'm happy for him to play and that we can play together. We play tons of Mario Kart. You know, we're going to battle in ARMS. I know we played – I mean, he loved Zelda, beat it at least twice, maybe even three times. Just absolutely captivated him. Mm-hmm. So I'm just – as a parent, it's nice that we've got a platform that has – that kind of content, because Sony and Microsoft, for all the good stuff they do, they are not, I would not call them family friendly at all. They're not family friendly systems.
Well, you watch the press briefings at E3 every year, and you can tell that's not what they're going for.
Right. That's not what they're going for. And I get it, because that's where the money is. I'm not even saying it critically. It's just a fact.
Sure.
And so that's why I'm happy that Nintendo is still so much more family friendly. I appreciate that. I really do.
And Xbox One X, Rich, what is this something you're interested in? Are you planning to pick it up?
It's tempting. I'll tell you that. It's tempting only because I'm all in on the sort of the Xbox One digital subscription offering. And that just makes that a slightly more convenient version of that. Because as I mentioned, I already have a terabyte drive plugged into my original, you know, launch day Xbox One. So I've got the space, but it is an original launch day Xbox One, and I do plan on having these services for a while. So it's tempting, you know, and a lot depends upon what else is going on money-wise at that time. It's a significant dollar amount. I do not have a 4K TV, nor do I foresee getting one anytime in the near future, and that's not really my thing anyway. So I don't know. It's not a slam dunk, but if it's really easy to get an Xbox One X, I'm not going to tell you that I won't get one. I'll put it that way. You know, who knows if there's going to be supply. They might be sold out. Yeah. There might be plenty of them. You know, that's another thing. Like, I'm not going to go hunting for it. Like, this Super Nintendo Classic, I'm hunting for that thing. But I ain't hunting for an Xbox One X. Oh, yeah, I got to get one of those. You kidding me?
NES Classic was a disaster rollout. I'm interested in the Xbox One X. I don't really need to be, and I don't think Microsoft really made a great case for why anybody would need to pick up an Xbox One X at $500. But the tech person in me wants it anyway. To go with a 4K TV, get the HDR, get improved frame rates, improved loading times, even things like that are appealing to me. If I do that, Xbox One, other than the show, Xbox One becomes where I play every game that I can, except for the exclusives. I mean, I would switch over, we have these PS4 leagues like in Madden and stuff. I would switch at that point.
I'm telling you. I play a lot more on my Xbox One than I have in a long time, and I'm definitely more on the Xbox One these days, but I do keep playing the show, obviously, and I have the golf club on the PS4, and our Madden leagues are traditionally on the PS4. I always play the EA Access games on the Xbox One. So I could see making the switch if enough people made the switch. Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely playing. I mean, I play both of my consoles. Actually, I play all three of my consoles. I don't play them nearly as much as I want to, but I do actively play all three of them. And but I'm definitely much more playing the Xbox One than I was. Certainly, there was a time post launch of the two, in the early days of the Xbox One, when I barely turned it on. That's no longer the case, but
I remember how it's kind of pivoted over time, and the Xbox for me at first was I used it for my TV. That it's funny how you don't ever hear about the TV features anymore or the Kinect or anything like that. That didn't work for them. That didn't sell consoles. As you learned, it has to be a gaming machine, right? Make it a gaming machine and people will buy it. And that's what they're doing with this one. So
there's a market in the world for machines that are dedicated to doing something really well.
Yeah.
And just think of the appeal for you and for me. It's really nice to be able to plug this box into a television and use it to play hundreds of games really well.
Yeah,
it's nice that it has other services and stuff, but games is kind of a specific thing. So unlike all of the other machines that can do everything, I think we're seeing it, right? I mean, tell me if you think I'm wrong, but wouldn't you say that to some degree all three platforms are healthy? I mean, certainly Nintendo is, with the Switch being a success. Sony, we know, is number one overall in volume and revenue and continues to have a bright outlook. Microsoft is the only one where you look at it and you don't know, but they are, at least from a consumer standpoint, as we're talking about, maybe the best sort of option, of a machine to buy if you want to play a lot of great games for the best value. So,
And if you want the latest in, raw power.
Yes,
and all that. So, there's definitely a market for that. All right. Well, I think that'll do it. We're done with the first half of 2017. Forget you. We're on to the back half of 2017. We'll have 10 plus sports games releasing from late August through the end of September. We're gonna have busy times. Those games are gonna be gearing up far as promotion of them. Very soon, so we'll be getting more information on them. We'll be talking about that. We'll be assessing all sorts of different things related to them coming up in future shows. So thank you, everyone, for looking back on the first half of 2017 with us in this episode. We'll be back next week with a new one for you. Take care till then.